the All Things XR podcast. Where you can get the best AR/VR analyzers from the biggest names in the field.
Hi everyone, welcome to the All Things XR podcast. I'm Mojtaba. In today's episode, we have a conversation with Adam Debrezanid, co-founder of Primer. Hi, Adam.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me on.
Thanks very much, Adam. Welcome to the All Things XR podcast. Can you tell us more about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, I'm a co-founder here at Primer. We are a mobile AR startup trying to make it very easy for you to visualize your space. And pretty much any cool modification you want to do to your space. If you want to put up some new paint or wallpaper or tiles, our iPhone app makes it very easy to do that.
So Adam, can you tell us more about Primer in more detail and tell us what is its mission?
Yeah, so we started last year in February. We raised a small round of kind of VC capital with kind of that goal that I set out, which is should be really easy for you to make changes to your space. Right now, a lot of design tools that kind of interior designers use or home decor brands use are very kind of outdated. Like a lot of people are using like Google SketchUp and even CAD just to do simple things like, hey, what does this kind of tile, you know, that I have look like in my living room or my kitchen? And we kind of thought mobile AR was like the perfect technology to make that entire process a lot easier.
Mm-hmm. Great. So Adam, your journey in AR is very interesting, from fitness AR to Mapbox to Primer. Can you tell us more about this journey in more detail?
Yeah, so I started maybe getting really excited about spatial computing way back in the day. I used to work at Google and worked on some of the early VR efforts there, like what ended up becoming Daydream.
Interesting.
And, you know, I was a designer before, but always kind of wrote some code. And I realized so much of, I guess, the projects I worked on were so two-dimensional. You know, it was like UI systems, and it was like basic UIs on like, you know, flat screens. And working on the VR stuff was the first time I had to think in like, you know, in 3D and 6 degrees of freedom. And even really basic things like displaying text was such a hard problem in VR,
exactly,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah, like, you know, the display quality wasn't super great. The lenses weren't super great. Like, you know, just like very primitive things. Like, how do you have a keyboard in VR? Like, these are questions that weren't really answered.
Mm-hmm.
And I left Google to kind of just work on little side projects, and I was a little burnt out. I was like, I just want to work on some fun stuff again. And ARKit kind of launched right when I was taking that time off, and I got really excited about it because, you know, a lot of the cool parts of spatial computing were still there, but now we have distribution. So it's like now you could actually send this really cool AR experiment to like your friend, and like he or she probably has an iPhone, so they could actually play with it versus doing that funky thing of like, let me bring over my gaming laptop and my headset, you know?
Yeah.
And fitness AR kind of came out of that. It was like, what's like a fun experience that we can ship that is not going to take a whole lot of work, that our friends can play with. And at that time, I was really into cycling, and, Mapbox came out with this Unity SDK, and I was like, oh, this kind of seems like the perfect little project. Let me just display my bike rides and on this little Mapbox SDK and put that in AR. And I kind of tweeted out a very early example of that. And I think that tweet got a lot of traction, I think.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and I think it was like the first AR thing that most non-spatial computing people saw, at least on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Like I looked at the Twitter analytics for it, and I think it got like a million impressions in like 2 weeks,
uh-huh,
which is crazy. Yeah, and then the quick journey there was Mapbox reached out, and they were kind of really bullish on AR, and they were bullish on kind of the intersection of location data and kind of spatial computing, and they reached out, and we got acqui-hired by them. And then I worked at Mapbox for a bit, kind of leading their AR and 3D teams.
So how did you end up co-founding Primer?
Yeah, so that was I reconnect. Russ, who is my co-founder, has been a friend for a while, and we reconnected near the end of my stint at Mapbox, and he was just like, "Hey, you've been working on AR stuff for a while. Like, can I get some advice from you on how to kind of build stuff in this space?" And he kind of pitched to me that vision of like, it should be really easy for you to kind of redo your home and all these home decor brands that traditionally kind of power that experience, don't really have the technical prowess to build experiences like this. And I got really, really excited about that idea. And I was kind of itching to do something more consumer. Like a lot of the work we did at Mapbox was really, really cool, but it was very like platform level. So you were building SDKs and you were doing a lot of stuff for partners, but it wasn't like a fun experience your friends could download that you built. So I was kind of, searching to scratch that itch, and it was kind of right place, right time. And that's kind of how I guess that's how Russ and I reconnected and how we started working on Primer last year.
So, Adam, what are the lessons you learned from selling your company to a company like Mapbox? Because most AR folks haven't had the chance to sell their company or get acquired.
Yeah. Oh man. I think a lot of what it comes down to is building an AR prototype that looks cool on Twitter and that looks awesome in a talk or looks awesome in a blog post is fundamentally a very different thing than actually shipping that thing as a consumer experience. And I'm sure like you've been around the block for a while. So, that journey from prototype to a consumer product is a really, really long one.
Exactly.
And I think there's a lot of things that I learned during that. But just how important marketing was, like I think we did a pretty good job of having pretty good, like a pretty good website, pretty good video recordings that people could share. We built a decent relationship with the App Store team that helped us get promoted. But I think we also just like shipped an experience that made AR easily accessible for people who had never really played with it before. So we spent a lot of time making sure the UIs were like native iOS. And then the AR component was Unity, but only the AR component was Unity. Everything else was like native. I think that kind of made it feel at home on iOS, and it made it feel actually like a really polished app. Like it wasn't like a hacky prototype. So I think when we were kind of going into the acqui-hire talks, right? It was like it made the app feel a lot more polished. We actually did ship it. We did have a lot of marketing artifacts. We had a lot of press. We had a lot of good data and analytics. It just made it seem kind of like a buttoned-up experience. And it's funny because like, when people ask about kind of the business side of AR and VR, it's like, I think a lot of engineers who are like super, super talented and do a lot of amazing work maybe undervalue some of the soft skills that it comes that's like sales and marketing and like making sure you incorporate the company the right way. And that is so much part of your success, right? So I guess that was the big key takeaway.
So, Adam, what do you think about recent hardware progresses, specifically about Apple putting LiDARs in iPads and iPhones?
Yeah, I mean, so the LiDAR component is really exciting for us. That's a huge help for us with Primer. It's really cool to be able to like sit on your couch and then just like tap on a wall from your iPad versus needing to like walk up to the wall or needing to do that kind of cumbersome calibration process. And then of course kind of the occlusion and the new kind of depth API that comes from it really, really helps in particular. It's really fascinating to see Apple go more of the LiDAR approach. I know a lot of AR startups, right? Like that I'm sure you know of, like 60 AI. And a lot of these folks try to do kind of the meshing and occlusion from like a single camera.
Exactly.
It's really interesting to see Apple be like, hey, we're not going to do that. We're just going to flex our supply chain and flex our hardware prowess and just put LiDAR and everything. Like no other company could do that, really. Like I'm sure Samsung and those big headset manufacturers can, but like Apple is so uniquely positioned where they own the software stack for AR, but then they also have this incredible supply chain where they can just go, you know what, we're just gonna put LiDAR sensors in like all our devices, and it's gonna solve huge problems for us.
That's a big commitment.
Yeah, I mean, it's I'm sure it's costing them quite a pretty penny to put it on all their stuff, right? And you know, I think what we're seeing with iPad Pro, right, is probably just the beginning of their strategy to kind of put that sensor everywhere, but I'm totally just guessing.
Yeah, as I said, that's a big commitment, because other than AR, it doesn't really have any use for the camera, at least that I know of. And I think that shows how Apple envisions the future.
Yeah, it does seem like they're quite kind of committed to it. I am curious, though, what else they're going to use the sensor for, other than just AR. Like, I'm sure there's some cool stuff that they're thinking about. I'm curious to see what they'll do with it.
Yeah, exactly. So, Adam, recently, one of my favorite startups in AR space, Torch, announced that it is discontinuing the product and closing the company. We hear more and more AR startups failing these days. Magic Leap, the giant AR company with billion-dollar valuation, also is struggling. What do you think about that?
Yeah, man, there's a lot to say there. You know, Torch is a really, really cool tool. And I really like the team over there, Paul and Josh.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things where I heard this quote, I'm forgetting who it's from, where startups, like the question to ask is never, has anyone done this before? The question to ask is like, is it the right time? Because so many people are trying to build things that like, it's really all about timing. And I think Torch and a lot of these companies built the right tools in the right space with the right execution, but probably just too early timing.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree.
But it's so hard. It's almost impossible for you to figure out if the timing is right or not, because, you know, like Torch started, I think, like 2 years ago or maybe 3 years ago now.
Yeah.
And you know, they could have had very rosy projections where, hey, this industry is going to bend in this direction, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it just turned out it bended away from them. But it'll be interesting, because like I think those kind of companies, like the Torches, right? Like they'll be kind of seen as like early leaders.
Yeah.
And it might be that in like 3-4 years, Facebook and Snapchat and Apple and a lot of these companies probably will have tools that are like very close to what Torch built.
Exactly.
But will it just be at the right place, right time?
Yeah, yeah. What do you think about Magic Leap?
Magic Leap is interesting. You know, I've having gone through the VC process, mm-hmm, with Primer, where we've raised kind of two rounds now. You know, it's a very big, bold bet that they made. And it, once again, it's all about timing, right?
Like, yeah.
There could have been a world, like it's very rational in 2014, 2015 to convincingly project a future where like in 2020, this is kind of a huge computing platform and like the headsets are going to be low price and it's going to be a whole new way of working. And it just so turned out it didn't really work like that. Like, I remember at Mapbox, we kind of had a similar realization where we realized that a lot of the people that were using your SDKs were just more enterprise focused. Those people ended up having kind of relationships with Microsoft, and they all use HoloLenses. And I thought Microsoft did a pretty smart strategy where they said, hey, we're not really going to focus on consumers. We're going to focus on kind of niche enterprise clients and their kind of unique needs. But it's really, really hard when you've raised so much VC capital to go back to your investors and be like, hey, remember this like consumer vision I sold you on about how like we're the new Apple and this is like the new Macintosh? Turns out we're going to build stuff for Dell. It's really hard. It's really hard to do that.
Yeah. But they did it.
And like when you're like, they did it really late, right?
Yeah,
it's like,
I agree.
They did that pretty late. Like, I don't know too much about the Magic Leap stuff. Like, I know friends that work there, but just from like the articles that I've read, I mean, it was really fascinating to see how much they've missed their projections of how much headsets they thought they were going to ship and how much they actually shipped, right? It was like off by a magnitude of 100 or 1,000. Like, which is just brutal. I mean, that, you know, 2020 hindsight, right? But you have a signal like that, like, oof, your charger is pretty off.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. I think all the giant companies like Apple, Google, Facebook, etc. have reached the conclusion that AR is the next big thing, and they don't want to be left behind. With these big players in the market, how do you think startups can survive?
You know, we've thought a lot about this at Primer because we're really small. And the way I think about it is just be really, really scrappy and make sure people want to pay for your things and build something that people want. Like we've seen that with the first round of VR startups that have kind of gone under where they raised $10, $20 million and they hired a team of like 20 to 30. And then they're like, MAU was like three people. It's so hard to keep a company afloat when you have 20 or 30 full-time engineers and designers and product people. But you know, this industry has a very different growth trajectory than like mobile did. And I think the core mistake a lot of people made was in that like Oculus DK2 era, people thought it was going to be a very similar growth trajectory as what happened to like the iOS App Store, for example. And that really skewed perceptions of how I think VCs valued VR companies. And it just set completely unrealistic expectations. So the people that survived out of those were people who either raised a small amount of money, so they were forced to be scrappy, or people who did raise a good amount of money. And then they like had the knowledge to be as scrappy as possible to wait for the rides. Wait for the tides to rise.
I totally agree. The space, the AR space, is changing very, very fast, and adapting to that environment is and predicting the future where you can perform is really, really hard. I'm experiencing it right now with my company Alpha Reality. So, Adam, what do you think is the most important challenge of AR to solve today, both technical and non-technical?
Yeah, there's, I would say on the non-technical side, it's like just design problems. You know, like how my world has really been mobile AR recently, but like there's still like really fundamental blocks of like educating users on like how to place something in AR, how to resize it, how to basically interact with the scene. When we talk to our kind of, you know, when we do user research or when we talk to our brands, you know, people still call this like a video feed. It's like, oh, that's cool. You put things in like the video feed. Like, there's still very close to zero education on like what AR is or how AR works for like 90 plus percent of people that own iPhones. It's crazy. So I think that's a huge challenge. It's a little bit like, you know, when the first Macs came out and people needed to like learn how to use the mouse. Like there was whole like software, there was like literally software you could buy that was like mouse exercises of like move your mouse cursor here, like let it capture the, you know, capture the bird here. And I think that's kind of where we are, where they are. It's like we need these kind of, you know, fundamental design building blocks that just haven't been built yet. On the technical side, you know, it's the instant placement. It's the stuff the LiDAR provides, and also just occlusion. For indoor and for outdoor, like, you know, we tried building stuff in Mapboxes, super, super hard. Of how do you do kind of outdoor AR experiences that are persistent? Like, how can I put down a virtual object at a specific lat long and have it appear for the next person that's going to be there? And technically, that's a super hard problem to do. And it requires a bunch of data, and it's really bandwidth intensive. So I'm sure that'll be solved by Apple or Google or a big tech company, but that's a super, super hard problem. But when they do solve it, it's going to unlock like a bunch of incredible AR experiences. So I'm very excited for that feature.
As you said, one of the most interesting fields in AR is AR cloud. How do you analyze the AR cloud space? It seems to be an area where all the big players like Niantic, Snap, Facebook, and Apple are competing with each other. And considering your experience at Mapbox, as you said, how do you analyze this space?
I was kind of immersed in that world for a little bit, working in Mapbox. So we spoke with a lot of, I guess AR cloud companies. So like the 6Ds, the Phantasmos, the Scapes, the blanket on the other ones now, but we've talked to pretty much every person or every company. And it was a really, I mean, it's a really, really technically hard problem. It didn't make sense from Mapbox's side to like actually invest in building any of that infrastructure because the cost was so high. But you know, we saw a lot of value in it. My personal opinion on that stuff was that just the big tech companies, that whole point cloud localization technology would just be commoditized. That like Apple would roll out something, Google would roll out something. They would make it free to use as a way to get you to build on their platforms. And then that was just going to kill all these startups. And we kind of saw that happening. Like, you know, like 6D ended up selling to Niantic and Scape sold to Facebook. I'm not sure what's going on with Phantasmo and the others, but it's a really, really tricky thing when you're so early in the space because you have no idea that if you become the standard and you become the company that people build these experiences on, you're going to have this incredible velocity as a startup, right? Like you could become like Stripe. But if you don't, and if you just have a big company completely commoditize and make your product free, then it just kills you instantly. So it's just a really, really hard thing to work on. But I'm curious who is going to end up owning that layer of how these AR experiences talk to each other. I think that's the real cool opportunity.
Well, with these big players, who do you think will have the best chance in the AR cloud space?
Just because of distribution and their ability, you know, I think one thing Apple does super, super well, they don't get enough credit for, is they're just really, really good long-term thinkers and really good long-term executors. Something, you know, Google always had incredible engineering prowess and always had really incredible tech, but it seems like on some of their AR core side of things, they just kind of had a hard time doing long-term planning. So they were always like, oh, this is the cool new focus for the year. And then they would shift focus. And they'd be like, oh, this is the cool new focus for a year. Like, now we're doing Tango. It's like, now we're doing Daydream. Now we're doing AR Core. Now we're doing this. And Apple's really good historically at just putting like noise canceling headphones on and just focusing on their own game and making sure that all their products across the board support the new frameworks, making sure that they roll out sensors in one device and then it goes to others. Making sure that they like loop in developers, you know, to like actually build on top of the stuff and give them great platforms for distribution. But I think out of all the companies, I think Apple's going to be probably the one to kind of own some of the AR cloud. And yeah, at least on mobile AR side of things, that's kind of my hunch. That's a very safe bet, but that's what I'm going to stick with.
I totally agree, actually, because if we see eyeglasses in the future, and also on the privacy side, you know, Apple is not an advertising company and, you know, doesn't sell its data to anyone, and if we put on glasses, privacy will be a huge issue. If, you know, everything you're looking at, Facebook is storing or Google is storing, and they try to show you ads on where you're looking and your private life and all that. But Apple, as it is not an advertising company, I think, has the best chance. So, Adam, with recent changes in the world due to the pandemic crisis, what do you think are the areas where AR and VR startups can take advantage of the current situation?
Yeah, so we saw that firsthand with Primer, where we launched in the middle of this kind of pandemic, and of course we very much did not set out to launch in a pandemic, right? During our launch planning last year. But it was interesting because people were stuck in their homes. And that naturally, you know, let a lot of people question, like, how should I change the space I'm not going to spend a lot of my time in? And at the same time, the kind of home decor brands that we work with had similar, you know, they had a huge amount of orders. Mm-hmm. Like, one brand is like, every day for us is like our biggest sales day we've had all year. And that for us kind of gave us that opportunity of like, oh my God, all these brands who probably were going to be very hesitant to try new technology are now utterly relying on it because all their showrooms are closed. Like, the only way they can engage with customers is through this mobile AR experience. If they want to talk about how this wallpaper looks like in their space, or how this towel looks like, or what paint color they should choose. So we had our pipeline of brands kind of just explode, like in like that 1 or 2 weeks after we launched. We had more brands wanting to talk to us than like Russ and I had time to field calls, which is crazy.
Really?
Yeah, and none of these brands came to us, and none of these brands were like, we think AR is the future and like we're technologists. Like, all these brands were just like, we want our products, we want people to put our products in their space and help us and like help us help our customers have a better shopping experience. Mm-hmm. So they didn't come to us for the tech, but the tech was the reason they were coming to us, which is interesting. So I think my biggest advice I could give to people out there is like, where they are, make sure you're solving a product problem first, and that AR is just like the best solution to that thing versus like trying to invent problems that AR could solve, because I don't think you're going to really find a market that way.
Exactly. So how can our listeners get access to Primer?
Yeah, so you can go to primer.com to learn more about the app. And if you just want to go straight to the app itself, you can go to primer.app, and that'll bring you to the App Store, and you can just download it. We're available in America and Canada and the UK, I believe, are the three countries that you can check out Primer in. It's a free app. You can just just play with it.
Do you have any plans for Android users?
You know, Android is something we've talked a little bit about. We're really trying to get the iOS experience really great right now, and really kind of focus on that first.
Great. So, as our last question, Adam, how do you plan in Primer for a future where we will all wear AR glasses, and how do you envision it?
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where I'm sure it will happen. And it's a future that might be inevitable. I think it's gonna take a long time though. So when that future does arrive, we just want to be the best place for you to, envision changes to your face. But I think the headset future is gonna come quite a ways from now. Like in the way that you and I think of headsets, where it's like a magical thing you put on your head and suddenly your environment like be perfectly mapped and calibrated and all that stuff. I think that's a ways away. I think we're gonna have this like interesting transitional period for the next couple of years where we'll maybe have like some sort of glasses or some sort of thing that helps us kind of get to the future, like AR audio or just like a very small display before we reach that kind of that cool future realm of like this headset has like huge field of view and amazing optics and you can wear it outside and all that stuff. I think that's a little bit of a ways away.
Yeah, I totally agree. At least 2 to 5 years from now. Adam, as you have many experiences in designing for AR and VR, what do you think will be the main differences between designing for mobile AR and wearables and AR glasses?
I think because input devices are huge. With mobile AR, your hands are tied up because they're controlling your viewport and your camera. And for wearable, AR headsets, right? It's like suddenly you either have a six-dot controller or you have kind of hand control, and just your entire input method for how you interact with the world is just like super different. So I think that's the biggest difference. I mean, it really unlocks AR to be more of a creation space, and mobile AR right now feels more like a consumption space. So I think that'll be like the biggest change.
Great. Well, Adam, thanks very much for joining the All Things XR podcast.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, thank you so much for having me on.